Life on the farm can seem idyllic to the people who live in the city or the suburbs. So the people who actually do live on farms and ranches, life is just a bit grittier and ordinary. It's a lot of work, that's for sure. And we get a real sense of what rural life is like in a book filled with essays called Ankle High and Knee Deep, Women Reflect on Western Rural Life. Gail Jenner is the editor of this all. She taught English and history in schools and married a fourth-generation cattle rancher. She and her husband live on the family's original ranch in the Scott Valley of Siskiyou County, where she works on the ranch and writes full-time. Gail, good to have you here on the Jefferson Exchange.
Hello.
And it was Megan who actually figured this out, but we've heard the name Gail Fiorini Jenner many, many times because it tends to show up in our As It Was segment at the end of this hour, and you are Gail Fiorini Jenner.
Yes. I love to write history, and the As It Was program has been just a delightful program to be a part of.
So paint a picture for us first about rural life as portrayed in Ankle High and Knee Deep. I mean, how rustic a life for you on your ranch?
Probably not as rustic as it once was, obviously, but it's sort of a living history, day-to-day living, and things that are seasonal are tough at times when it's cold and winter and you're still feeding cattle, getting up early. And, you know, my husband gets up very, very early. There's actually six men that work daily, our son, two sons, our nephew, my brother-in-law, my father-in-law, who is now 91 and still works a 5 to 6 hour day each day, and my husband. And the women are sort of grease monkeys and occasional workers, but certainly active on the ranch.
That's incredible. Your father-in-law, 91 years old, still working more than half a day?
Oh, yeah. He's gritty, and he's tough. And I got to hand it to him. He's never let anything hold him back.
Wow, that is really impressive. How big a ranch? How many animals, acres and cattle feed, so forth?
We probably farm and raise, we raise over 1,000 head of mother cows. So it's a pretty substantial herd for this area. We farm about 2,500 acres, and it's been in family, as you stated, five generations now. The ranch was established in actually about 1872.
Okay, so a very long time. But this is not a life that you were born to, I gather. You're,
no.
You're not a fourth, third, second, you're first generation rancher, right?
Definitely first generation, and I will always be considered, an import. But it is the kind of lifestyle after 45 years that I can't imagine living any other way.
What did your birth family do? What did your father and mother do?
My father actually worked for Sunset Magazine for many years and Arm & Hammer Baking Soda. He was a first-generation Italian-American. I was raised in the Bay Area. Went to school in Chico, met my husband, and moved up to the ranch.
You went to school at Cal State Chico?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So how tough a transition was it to go from this fairly urbane and urban life from the Bay Area to Chico and then into Etna, basically?
I have been asked that question many times, and it's interesting. I sort of felt like I came home when I married into the family, and I was an eager young bride and took it all in, and we lived in a pretty rustic old farmstead at that point. I mean, we were sitting on timbers, and, you know, you could practically see the dirt to the floor and boarded up windows. So it was a long process bringing that house back, but I actually never felt like I had to transition. It just felt very natural to me.
Did you fix up that house, or did you
yes.
build a different? Really? Okay.
No, we fixed that house, and my husband has done most of the work. He's pretty much a jack of all trades.
My wife once said she didn't want to live in a project, but, you know, it kind of happens. She just said, well,
yes.
We could do this. Hey, let's do this now. So has it been like that, where you're
absolutely.
A constant round of things?
And we're getting ready to go back through that again after many, many years of letting things not get finished and all of that.
This is like painting the Bay Bridge. You get to one end and then start again at the other and keep coming back. Tell us about, speaking of projects, let's talk about Ankle High and Knee Deep and how that project came together.
It was interesting. I've done a number of books, local history, regional history, a couple of novels. And I was at a Women Writing the West conference and met the editor at Globe Pequot. And this is a project that's been in my head for a long time. You see all kinds of memoir and stories being written about all kinds of things. And I, when I sat down with her, I said, there are so many women who have wonderful, wonderful stories that are not necessarily writers, but have great stories about living in the West and living on a ranch and being raised on a ranch or moving to a ranch, as, like me, as a bride. And she said, well, that sounds great. What else can you, you know, come up with? And so we talked for quite a length of time, and my original title didn't wow her. And she said, well, give me some idea. And I kind of laughingly said, well, my husband is always saying that, you know, we're ankle high and knee deep in one thing or another. And she started to laugh, and she said, that's it. That's the title. That's a great point of view. And so that's sort of how the book was born.
Well, the cover picture certainly tells the story of Ankle High and Knee Deep, with the picture of the jeans and the red cowboy boots caked with mud.
Yeah.
We assume it's mud.
Yeah.
let's just go with the mud.
A little of everything.
All right. We will head up to a short break here right now, talking to Gail Jenner about her editorship. And some of her own essays appear as well in the book Ankle High and Knee Deep. Women Reflect on Western Rural Life. We are in the midst of Fall Fund Drive here on all the services of Jefferson Public Radio. Total stands just a little shy of $33,000 at the moment. We're trying to reach $190,000 by the time all is said and done next Tuesday. We would love to get a pledge of support from you at 888-552-6191. 888-552-6191, or pledge online at ijpr.org. You know, if you do the pledging online, you can manage to keep listening to Gail Jenner talking about Ankle High and Knee Deep and women talking about Western Rural Life, and be able to push the little buttons that get your pledge up there as well. So you can multitask a little bit. ijpr.org for that, online, or rather on the phone at 888-552-6191. Thanks for your pledge of support, and we'll come back and talk more with Gail Jenner about Ankle High and Knee Deep in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. We are talking today about life in the rural West as portrayed by women writers, because that's all you'll find in the collection of essays called Ankle High and Knee Deep, Women Reflect on Western Rural Life. Gail Jenner, who lives in the Scott Valley in the Etna area on a ranch, on a fifth-generation cattle ranch now, is the editor of the collection. Several of her essays appear in here as well. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange if you have some of your own stories you'd like to share about life on the farm, life on the ranch. We'd love to hear them. 800-838-3760, the phone number anywhere in the region. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Now, obviously, some of your essays I just mentioned are in here, but any of the other writers that you included in the collection, people living out of what was their birth element as well?
Yes, absolutely. There's several. One that has been read aloud a number of times. It's fun. And she actually also writes for JPR, Madeline Ayers. And she writes a couple of very wonderful tongue-in-cheek stories about moving into rural America and taking it up. So that those were fun. And as I mentioned earlier, a number of the women were not writers by any kind of profession or anything, but they had these great stories. So they sort of put them together, and I took them and edited it and submitted it. And then the stories that were chosen by the publisher and the editors.
So the first essay of yours about the trouble birthing a calf, mm-hmm. and I suppose it's sort of like you write about the ones that don't go well because so many more do, but I'm just curious about how often it happens where you really need to assist mom getting the calf out.
With first calf heifers, those young cows birthing for the first time, and that's what that story was about, it happens probably one out of every 40 or 50 or 60 head. Right now we're in the process of birthing, and almost daily they have to bring a young cow in and help her. Most of the time it's very successful and nothing bad happens, but occasionally you get surprised, and either the calf is turned backwards or the mother has labored too long, or she sort of like with humans, you know, there's just those complications that occur. Maybe the she's labored so long, the afterbirth covers the face and the calf suffocates. I have seen my husband do mouth-to-mouth resuscitation on a number of calves over the years. But most of the time, it's very successful. And that story I wrote originally after we had only been married about 10 years, and it was a pretty emotional event for me.
It sounds like you did become, you mentioned when you moved to the ranch, it was like, well, this feels like home. Mm-hmm. But then some of the daily things, though, I mean, there's dealing with the mud and the muck and the manure and afterbirth for cattle and all the various juices that come with that. So was there ever an ick factor for you or did it just sort of settle in?
There was an element of ick factor. Yes, absolutely. The first time I had to kill a chicken was a real ick factor. My husband was gone. Everybody was gone off the ranch, and I had this poor chicken that was mutilated by the dogs, and I had to swing the axe, and it was a pretty emotional event for me. That was the first real ick factor.
Well, but so there's always the element of death there too. But then, as you mentioned, you know, having the dogs around, dogs, chickens, you really have a whole menagerie of things around you. There's life around you at all times.
Oh yes, and we are actually right in the middle of the flyway, so we have a lot of nature that just surrounds us daily. Which, for me, I love wildlife. I love birds, and it's a great element that we have that is part of our life.
Is there some water, large body of water nearby that attracts the...
We have the slough that runs through the middle of our property, and it's been a natural preserve for well over 100 years. We have, you know, hundreds of geese and ducks and heron and eagles, hawks.
So living on a ranch now, and again, as a girl from the Bay Area, so, you know, suburbs at least, if not big city, I mean, what skill have you developed that you never thought you'd have?
I've become quite a gardener. We used to have a garden when I was a girl growing up, but very small, and mine is a fairly large garden. I do a lot of canning, a lot of drying, driving a tractor, riding a horse. I love horses. You know, as a girl, we only rode occasionally, and those were rented horses and pretty deadhead horses. And so that's been exciting. Going into the mountains on annual events and being on horseback for long periods of time, that certainly is something that I've grown into.
Deadhead horses?
Well, you know, those slow moving horses that don't have a lot of energy.
The kind the city kids get put on the first time they're taken to the stables and say,
right,
how many times have you heard? Oh, it's my first time. Okay, we're going to put you on this one. And the horse will do nothing.
Right, right. You know,
except just plod along.
Right.
All right, we have a call for you, so grab your headphones.
Oh, okay.
We're going to talk to John in Grants Pass with Gail Jenner about her book, Edited, Ankle High and Knee Deep, Women Reflect on Western Rural Life. Hi, John.
Hi. So I want her to comment on my little story here. I grew up in Portland. I was a total city guy, but my roommate in college was from Madras. And I remember one day, as an idiot, I go, boy, that must be an easy life. You just plant some stuff and watch it grow, da-da-da. So he goes, come on out to the ranch for the weekend. And after moving irrigation pipe for an entire day with rattlesnakes in it and all the rest of the stuff, man, I was so embarrassed. I mean, what a dumb attitude I had. I didn't know what kind of work it is. So I want you to just comment on what maybe is the hardest thing or the thing that takes the most time on a farm or a ranch.
All right. Thanks for that, John. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the hardest part is the physical energy that is spent. Whether it's winter or fall or summer or spring, there's just long, long hours in the outside door, you know, outdoors and moving, whether it's moving sprinklers or moving animals or putting up hay. It definitely is a long and tedious job. And so if you're down and out or struggling with your own health issues, you don't get to baby yourself very much. And I've often said to people, it's as a woman, it's hard. You have to learn to do other things and find your own avenues because it requires so much time. It's sort of like becoming a parent. You're never done with a job. And as a rancher or farmer, you're never done. There's always something more that has to be done. Animals come first, whether it's Christmas morning or somebody's birthday or somebody's wedding. Animals come first. And so you're right. It's an exhausting job. And I think time and energy is what takes most of our day, and I see my husband coming in at the end of the day pretty tired most of the days.
I didn't see it said in so many words in the book, but there's no calling in sick on the ranch.
No, no. Once in a while, and of course with as many partners now that we have, it's been a great relief that people can take time off, and we try to make sure that the boys get to go to their sons and their children's events and so forth, which when we were raising kids, there were fewer of us and a lot less time given over to the family.
Talk about the general degree of difficulty. I mean, trying to do what you do, running a cattle ranch with 1,000 head in a really hot and dry place.
Well, we're lucky, actually, where we are in Scott Valley. It's pretty green. We have a fairly high water table. So we have a little bit better opportunity than people say over in Shasta Valley or over in Klamath and other areas of Jefferson State. But, you're always subject to the weather. One of my essays talks about rain is always a blessing. And that is something that we all feel. It doesn't matter when it comes. It can come in the middle of an important hay crop, but you just have to remember that rain is always a blessing. So I know that before our daughter's wedding, we had this huge rainstorm, hailstorm, and everything was wiped out. I had planted 22 flats of flowers, and they were all destroyed. But our neighbors and the local feed store all came to our rescue and loaned us flowers and plants and so forth. But even then, I had to remind my daughter, Tricia, it's always a blessing.
I remember that particular essay and the sense that, oh my God, there probably isn't a flower left standing in this county, but there were.
There were, yeah. Not on our place, though.
Right. Nothing like that. Gail Jenner is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is a ranch woman from Siskiyou County, from the Scott Valley. She is also the editor of the book Ankle High and Knee Deep, Women Reflect on Western Rural Life, a collection of essays from women writers across the West, including Gail's own work. And you might recognize the name because you'll hear the name of Gail Fiorini Jenner in the As It Was segment at the end of many of the second hours of the Jefferson Exchange. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange if you have some stories about farm and ranch life of your own that you'd like to share with us and the inherent difficulties or pleasures as well. 800-838-3760, the phone number to call here, the email address jx@jeffnet.org. Your essay, Doing Is What Comes Naturally. I like the part where you talk about talking of recycling makes you chuckle.
Yes.
Why?
Because everything is recycled on the ranch. We have what we call the graveyard, and any piece of equipment that is no longer functioning is parked there. Most of it I can see from my kitchen window, but it is never considered done. Nothing is ever considered unusable, and it's often, as I point out, a piece of baling wire or a piece of baling twine that holds things together. And farmers and ranchers are so creative with what they have, and recycling is just a way of life.
So does he make like zombie machines from different parts of things that failed in the past?
Actually, he has built what we call feed wagons out of old tractor parts. He has restored and rebuilt any number of pieces of equipment. And it's always kind of a creative journey watching them devise something. He built a lawnmower out of old tractor parts. Our first moving lawnmower was one that he constructed.
Really?
Yeah.
He's very handy then.
Yeah. And it took out our lawn furniture too, because it had no brakes.
That'll make a difference, won't it?
Yeah.
Was that a bit of a discussion between the two of you?
Well, yes. And my grandmother, who was pretty old at the time, was sitting there watching it happen, and it just ate up the lawn furniture. And we laughed, but it was a pretty sad event.
You have a list of sort of observations of farm life and some words of warning, in a sense, in the introduction. And one of them is, always watch out for the soft places. Anything that looks that good has got to be dangerous. That's a really interesting line. What does that mean?
Well, and not to imply that my father-in-law does it a lot, but he's famous for taking a piece of equipment out into a wet field, and it looks good, it looks hard, and then suddenly you're stuck. And it seems like all of the young kids, when they're first driving, they find the soft places too. And then thank goodness for cell phones, because in the days with no cell phones, it was walking back to the barn and getting help and getting a tractor and pulling things out. So now with cell phones, at least we can get help a little faster.
How long a walk was that? I mean, if you're trapped in the, you know, if you've got something that broke down on the far end of the farthest pasture, how long a walk back to the house?
Oh, it could be a half mile or 3/4 mile or more than that.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And is your spread pretty typical for the Scott Valley?
I think in terms of size, we're probably one of the larger sized ranches, but certainly not the largest. But it's spread out over different parts of the valley. So, it's fairly large.
There's at least one reference in here to spreading manure around. And I just wonder if for those of us who aren't not involved in farm and ranch life, if those alone could fill a whole book.
Yeah, they could.
So let's move on from you to the other writers. You don't know them all personally, you mentioned. And so right. What was you mentioned the conference, Conference of Women Writing the West. Was that the major collection or venue in which you were able to pull some of these people together?
No, actually, it was a fun journey, because I put out a call to different cattle women groups. I put out a call online to different writing groups, different farm groups, Farm Bureau, and then people began to spread the word. And so I had women soliciting me for their stories and asking if they could submit a story. I would say that more than half of the women I don't know. And that was really fun, reading their stories and from different parts of the country. And we even had a nun who wrote, actually hers, I think, came from Michigan. And her story is a wonderful story. So we had women applying to write. And then, as I said, a lot of these women were just farm wives and not writers. So there was work to be done to clean them up. But they were wonderful stories.
How did the newbie writers take to the editing and the editing and the editing and the editing?
They were wonderful. They, in fact, when they first would submit their stories, they would say, "I know this one needs a lot of work, but you know, I hope you'll read the story and let me try it." And as I said, the editor and publishers, they actually selected the last 40 plus, no, I guess over 50 essays, because there were probably a good 65 or 70 that were submitted.
That must have been a really hard job to be able to say, okay, well, this one's really good, but there are two like it that are better, and
yes,
we're going to go with one of those.
And thankfully, I didn't have to make that choice, but it was hard. I had to communicate with the women and say, sorry, this one didn't make it. And that was hard for me, because I had invested a lot of time into all the stories and felt that all of them were worthy. But I knew that the publisher had a parameter, and that was the way it was.
So how'd you group the essays in the book?
By theme. I took them by theme, and we had talked about doing it by region, but then that didn't seem to fit. And so we discussed theme, and that was what I came up with. And then I found quotes that seemed to, promote the underlying theme of each story. And so each chapter is headed with a thematic statement and a quote.
And so the sections are fortitude, horse sense, community, self-reliance, memory, resilience, and lessons. It seems like lessons, and one of yours is in here too, doing is what comes naturally, mm-hmm, about recycling is in there as well. It seems like you get a lot of lessons from life in the country, though.
Well, and basically that was the underlying overarching theme of the book, was the lessons learned.
It's humbling, isn't it?
It is, very humbling. I think that's one of the greatest attributes of living, I think, a harder life, is the fact that you do learn to be resilient and to take death and trying times in stride. I think kids grow up with a great sense of accountability and responsibility, but tremendous joy. I mean, it's a children's paradise to live on a ranch.
Because there's just so much to do. And
there's
so much
to do, and there's a lot of freedom. There's a lot of expectation, but a lot of satisfaction.
It's not a faith-based book, you say early on, but about traditional values. But, people are people. They're going to be different from place to place, mm-hmm, even from farm to farm. And I wonder if within farm families and communities you find a lot of variety.
Oh, yes, definitely. I think that that's one of the myths that we hope to break through this book is the idea that country people are somehow slower or dimmer witted or you know, they're all of one ilk. And they're not. They're a great variety of people. There's human nature is human nature.
They're as different as people in the city. They all have the same sort of occupation.
Absolutely.
All right. Gail Jenner is our guest on The Exchange. Her book, Ankle High and Knee Deep, Women Reflect on Western Rural Life. As we go up to a break, let me remind you that it is fall fun to drive time here on all the services of JPR, and we're seeking your support to reach $190,000 in pledges by the time the drive comes to a close, one way or the other, next Tuesday evening. We stand just north of $33,000 at the moment. The next pledge could get us closer to $34,000. So please make your pledge now, whatever is within your means and in accordance with the value you place on public radio. We'd love to get that pledge of support. 888-552-6191, the number to call with a pledge, or you can make the pledge online through whatever device gets you to the internet at ijpr.org. Back with Gail Jenner and Ankle High and Knee Deep in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking with Gail Jenner, who you may have heard her name before on this very program because our As It Was segment contains a lot of work by Gail Fiorini Jenner. Because book fronts are rather narrow, she goes by Gail L. Jenner as the editor of a book called Ankle High and Knee Deep. Women Reflect on Western Rural Life. It's essays by women from farms and ranches all over the West. And it's just a great collection, only women involved. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange and share your stories of life on the farm or ranch as well. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. There's one essay I wanted to ask you about before we take a phone call here. And Carol Pitts Mapleton writes an essay called Of Mud and Earth, which is interesting because as we get more about local food and efforts to get to appreciate agriculture in our own region, there's the Know Your Farmer effort. This sort of brings Know Your Farmer from the other side.
Yes, and that's a wonderful story. And she's just an amazing woman. She's also in her 90s. And her childhood was very, very basic. And she is one of those people that when you're in her presence, you just feel that worldly wisdom emanating from her. And she loves growing things and has that great green thumb. She's one of those people that inspired me as a young bride, and she's been through tremendous tragedy in her life and just always has a smile and is gracious to everybody.
And where does she live?
She lives in the valley.
Oh, she does? She's
yes,
right there with you.
Yes. Okay. She was the mother of one of my husband's best friends who was killed in a logging accident up in Alaska. He was a helicopter pilot. But she is just great. And when she said, oh, I've got some stories for you, I said, yes, yes, yes.
Great to have the work of Carol Pitts Mapleton. Let's take a call. We have Jeannie in Medford on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Gail Jenner.
Hi. I learned the hard way about what roosters can do with their legs when you're gathering eggs to my legs. Oh. And then when I moved to Kentucky from Southern California, I liked your comment about assumptions and stereotypes. I thought they would all be barefoot and use corn cobs in the facilities and have outdoor facilities. And they all assumed that I knew John Wayne and that I was a surfer and that I had been to Disneyland, of course.
Absolutely.
None of the above were true. Well, maybe a little body surfing, but I'm really enjoying this.
Well, thanks, Jeannie, and thanks for sharing for your stories as well. But it's great about the assumptions that, you know, they thought that she would know movie stars because she came from Southern California. So people can make mistakes about each other. I have to ask this, though, about people who work on farms, though, because, you know, as a guy who's worked in TV and radio studios all my adult life, my hands are pretty soft. And when you talk about your husband and the things he can do with machinery and building your first lawnmower without brakes, if his hands are, I've gotten like really tough and
oh, hyper. His hands are immense. They're large and they're rough. In fact, in the days when I would wear pantyhose, which I don't seem to do much anymore, I would say, don't touch me, don't touch my legs, because he would snag and rip everything. And yeah, a farmer's hands are pretty interesting. In fact, our daughter, there's a poem in that collection that's about her dad's hands.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely they're weathered. He can burn them while he's welding, and he hardly even feels it. And yes, hands are. In fact, one of the ways that country people judge people oftentimes, unfortunately, is by looking at their hands.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. My father-in-law would, when he meets somebody, he'll look at him and he'll say, gee, you got a working man's hand.
Uh-huh.
You know? And that impresses him.
Okay, but if the hands are soft and pink like mine, then...
Well, he might not say anything, but he would notice.
one of the other essays, In the Garden by Elaine McMurray Cook. Gives the impression that, that yes, you're very busy on a farm or a ranch, but there is occasionally the time to appreciate the things that are growing around you.
Oh, absolutely. I think that, again, is one of the joys and benefits of being in the country, is that ability to slow down, or at least slow down as far as the amount of activity, to enjoy what's around you. There's not a day that I don't wake up. And even my husband, he's always looking, and he's always studying, and he's always examining the world around him. And you do notice things all the time.
You can't be in ranching or farming, I'm thinking, halfway. You can't just get out of bed in the morning and think, yeah, I mean, obviously you can't do it on a day-by-day basis, but it sounds like you're either all in or all out, because this is not the lifestyle for somebody who can't be essentially married to the work.
Again, I liken it to being like a parent. Once you're in it, you're there. And there are times when you get away, and it always feels good to get away. But again, it always feels good to get home again and know that there's stuff waiting to be done and having to be done. But it just becomes a when people talk about it as a lifestyle, that's really what it is. It's a lifestyle. It's just simply the way you live.
You mentioned earlier that animals always come first. You have to take care of their needs. And I remember reading Mary Kurtz's essay about Bugsy the horse, which makes me want to ask more about the animals on the farm and relationships. I mean, obviously horses get names. I'm guessing cows don't. So again, tell us about how that all works for the human mind and the relationships with the living things around you.
Well, the cattle don't get named, but a lot of times when we have a bottle calf that we end up feeding, you know, you get pretty close to that, and the kids oftentimes will name them. 4-H animals are always named, and it's a hard thing when the kids have to let go of their 4-H animals. Yes, the horses are definitely named, and they become part of the family, and everybody has their favorites. There are a few horses in our string of horses that aren't named, but they're usually pack animals, and they're not horses that we spend a lot of time with. But I think that letting go of life is one of the harder lessons that we learn, but it's, I think, a very necessary part of learning. And seeing an animal die never gets easy, even for a rancher. You know, pulling a calf and discovering that it's dying or it didn't make it, my husband comes in with a heavy heart.
That first essay of yours about a difficult birth for a calf, I get the sense that you hadn't been married and on the ranch for that long at that time.
No, we had been married, well, I don't know, it was probably 5, 6, 7 years, and I hadn't really started writing, but it was an event that I had become sort of a landmark event for me in that transition of becoming part of the ranch.
So there's a really moving piece by Amy Hale Auker about tearing down an old house, mm-hmm. and it's called Using Tools Backwards, which is a great title for it. Talk about the appreciation that rural people have for the hard work of the generations before who homesteaded the ranches and set them up and just got everything going.
Actually, that's one of my favorite essays as well, because I think we feel very much the same way. The family history is quite alive and well on our place. And whenever you look at an old barn, even to restore it or anything, there's that element of, oh, do we have to tear this down? Do we have to, you know, can we just sort of repair it? I think that's why a lot of times you see old buildings that are just sort of hanging on, because it is hard to see them go. And we don't let a lot of things go. We continually repair and rebuild and, again, recycle, reuse.
over and over.
Yes. Yeah, so we make things last. And there is that sense that things can last if you take care of them.
I wonder how much, though, practices have changed over time and over the time that you've been on a ranch, for example, whether there are things that have gotten very different for you. I mean, in this age of organic farming, and I know you chuckle when people talk about recycling and sustainability, but the fact is that there's a greater environmental ethic in the world around you. I just wonder if that's changed practices on the farm, or if technology has changed practices on the farm.
Oh, technology has changed dramatically. When we were first married, my husband hauled hay by hand, 1,000 bales a day. And now we put up the big bales, the one-ton bales, so things are much more mechanized. But I think that the practices in terms of recyclable and all of the sustainable, the organic, I think that there's always been that element to ranching. We take great pride in the fact that we, you know, raise 100% natural, all natural. And in fact, we girls have created an online retail business, Jenner Family Beef. And I like the idea of local and that kind of marketing. I think, however, people don't understand how much agriculture is needed in terms of production for the world. And we have, you know, we're producing more and more on less and less ground, because ground is being usurped all the time and taken out of production. So there's a real pressure to produce for the world market as well as the local market.
You know, I know that people who don't live on farms and ranches probably don't have a real accurate view of what goes on out there, but I also wonder about differences from part of the country to part of the country. And I wonder how different, for example, a ranch in the Scott Valley is from a farm in Kansas.
Oh, there's huge differences. You know, you're talking about thousands of acres and much more intensive farming there. And ours, because of the elevation and where we live, it really is a wonderful cattle raising area. We can't grow crops like they do in the Midwest. Our growing season is so much shorter.
And there's an essay in the book by Rhonda Sedgwick Stearns about continuing traditions in a changing world. And she talks about one of the earliest smell memories she has in her head is the smell of branding smoke.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder about some of the smells on the farm that are immediately evocative for you. That's probably a smell you had to get used to as a suburb kid.
Actually, that is one of the smells I had to get used to, because it's not a pleasant smell. The smell of burning hair is not pleasant. But I just spent a week down in Southern California helping a friend. And when I came home, as soon as I got above, it was close to Redding, and I rolled down the window, and you could just smell the air. It just smelled different. And the smell of animals, I love the smell of animals. Even the smell of manure is not an offensive smell. It's not like an industrial smell or the smell of burning smoke.
Right, it's an earthy smell for sure. Ankle High and Knee Deep is the book of essays. Women Reflect on Western Rural Life. The subtitle, Gail L. Jenner, Gail Fiorini Jenner, Yanorez on From As It Was, is the editor of the book. Is there an Ankle High and Knee Deep too, considering all the essays you had to reject from this one?
Actually, I just met with the editor, and I do have another book in the making. It's going to be a little bit different. It's going to be called Ranching Families, Stories of Stewardship.
Okay.
So
look forward to seeing it. Look forward to talking to you about it on the Jefferson Exchange. Gail
Thank
Jenner,
you.
Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you.